takes away a Doranginza must go and report to the MEC or to the ANC that, hey, I've been chased away. But if I'm chased away because I was sanctioned by the committee, then it's a matter that must come to the committee. Minister.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think the MEC will start first. And I think, Chairperson, fortunately, when the questions were directed, members here were specific who they were directing the question to. So there are questions we will direct to the MEC, then I'll take mine when he has finished.
MEC?
Thanks, Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. In no particular order, I will start with the questions of Honourable Mashalela, because there's just something that he raised which probably should have been part of our presentation. We are visited by the NCOP in the province as of yesterday. So we had a presentation that we made specifically about Addington Hospital. So in my opening remarks to the delegation, I mentioned that last week we made a presentation to the portfolio committee as the Department of Health regarding our quarter one expenditure. And we already indicated that we are expecting an over expenditure by end of financial year of 1.7 billion. Why did we say that? We were projecting that based on the accruals, the invoices that we had not paid by the 31st of March that were in the shelves. So when April 1 kicked in, we then had to honor some of those invoices, meaning that we are 1.7 billion short to meet our expected activities. Now, it cuts across generally most other programs regarding funding that comes to programs related to health. The pressures are enormous that you then sometimes err on the side of this and that staff retiring and not fill that post immediately because you think we are saving money. But there are consequences for doing that. There will be shortage of staff and there will be mistakes made. So we would still want to find an answer. That is why in the presence of the minister says, despite all that, you still need to find what is critical. You can't start a hospital 5-10 years ago with 100 cleaners. And you today think you're cutting down on staff, you have to have 10, because then that hospital is going to be ever dirty. So that's a part of working, but I can say this much, we'll never always have the organogram as is, all posts filled in with the resources that we have. We'll always be short here and there, but we need to be critical as to how short can you be. Mm. That part is what the minister is also indicating, that he's working with us on that one. So there is a possibility of cost cutting and actually even impacting, because we should actually be saying, is that statement correct to say we are going to be cost cutting, including staff, but we are not going to affect services? Maybe it's neither here nor there, not already good. If you do cost cutting, you sometimes impact on the services delivery. When we were talking with the minister the other time, the minister did raise this with me to say, you know, some of your innovations have probably been an impact on the whole program. And he was raising that because in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, we started a program called Pillar Ma. We were influenced by the observations that in the world, the commonest cancers, that is breast and cervix, are targeting women, and they are the commonest cause of deaths of women. And 30 years ago, when we were at medical school, we used to know that cancer of the cervix, the postmenopausal bleed, it affects women of the age 60 and beyond. Now it affects very young women, as early as 30, 40. Now we therefore said, let us create a program that says to women, when they come to our facilities, whether they come for toothache, we come for this, we must give them an opportunity to have a pap smear done. We increase the demand for this service. And we don't regret having done that, because I can tell you, while we have this issue going on, many, many lives were saved by detecting early cancer in women, and because of our screening, and giving them treatment that is worth. But what we are already busy with here today in Mamanga is very advanced cancer, absolutely advanced. But a lot of women and a lot of our patients have been saved by our call, by our campaign of Pillar Ma, by responding much early. Which then says, if you then increase at your own the demand, you then have to match up with resources. If your resources do not match, then you are in a challenge. And we are also looking after patients in the eastern part of the Eastern Cape. We are also looking after patients from Mozambique. We are also taking care of patients from Swaziland. Now, it answer now gives me to the statement or to the question raised by Honorable Mashalela. Do you think you have violated as indicated? I want to say, Honorable Mashalela, we are engaging with the Human Rights Commission on that part. Because if you look into that Section 27 of the Constitution, it actually stipulates within the resources that you have. And at no stage did we deny because of any whatever. Our resources were just too stretched beyond in imagination with the challenges that we are continuously engaging, because we would really be interested to get you to support us on this issue, let pyramid on TechMed, for what they did to us and Gauteng and Northwest in terms of that. But all our resources constrained as they are, we never denied. That's why we're engaging with the human rights, that as far as we are concerned, we believe that we did everything humanly possible to give service to our patients, resources willing. I want to indicate there's a very top South African who is an activist on cancer who called me 2 days ago and was saying there's a patient that she desperately thinks must be given this treatment and she's not getting that treatment. And we studied reasons why that has now suddenly become an urgent matter. And I can tell you this much, if you start this financial year, which therefore answers a particular question asked by another honorable member, how many patients do you know, do you have that needs oncology? We may not know, because today a gynecologist is seeing a patient who is presenting with a pain, and therefore they think this patient must now go the route of oncologists. But this particular South African who phoned me 2 days ago, and actually agitated wanting this patient to be seen as an urgent patient. I then followed the records. I now have information that this patient who has got an advanced breast cancer has been kicked out by a private hospital because she does not have any more medical aid to cover. Now, government must take, which is always normal. So what I'm saying, even if you start with a pool of 100 patients that you are looking after, down the line in August, September, another 100 patients will come from private hospitals because they just dump them. If they cannot give them help, they say, you know where to dump you. Sorry, we were looking after you very well yesterday, but there's no more medical aid now. Please leave. Leave in pain, in distress, and what is your home? You go to government. So I am actually speaking to these cancer activists. Say, you know, we are taking care of that patient. But it is not fair, the way you are raising it, as if this patient has been denied, because this patient has been dumped by a private hospital, and this patient now must come and jump the queue of many other South Africans who are waiting for this process. We don't deny. So the pool of waiting time and waiting months becomes even larger and larger, which I don't think we are able to provide honorable members to say how long, but it is really true, between 5 to 7 months waiting time because of this big pool to actually start this, that and other program, because this program is chemotherapy, radiotherapy. So I just thought I should actually start with those of Honorable Mashalela and therefore come to this. The retention strategy, raised by Honorable Mashalela, I think is embedded on our last page, where we say we need to create stability, not only as health department, but also with the medical school. so that specialists will know that if I apply for the job in KwaZulu-Natal, I'm guaranteed this support, a secretariat, or whatever that it takes. I'm also aware that my salary comes both from medical school and the university, I mean, and the Department of Health, and there are no issues. Those people have decided, and they know what they are doing, and I'm not going to be sent from pillar to post. That is what the minister was talking over, arcing to say the issues that we face are issues that we are talking about. There's only oncologists now, but it cuts across as creating stability with the medical school in terms of specialists, because there are very few in the country, and if you don't look after them well, then they actually leave. The other time, I was anticipating, I sent a memorandum to, I made a statement, I released it, and people say, oh, why is a wake-up call now? Last year to say, can all specialist doctors and nurses in particular who are leaving the system be interviewed? I just thought, even if they're doing it, it's good, but I wanted to insist that they do it. Because among other things, we were curbing this issue of a particular specialist, but it was really affecting us in nurses. They leave, and while we are now busy to interview, they are back also because they wanted us to catch up and come back the next month. So we wanted to know who could have to take the second best available nurse, then to say the top of the cream will leave and know that they are coming back next month anyway because their jobs are waiting for them. So I had insisted as of 2015 that all senior healthcare professionals, we must interview them and actually make sure you understand the reasons, because we could have corrected that. So it's a management issue that is needing a response here and there that we probably didn't get to be completed well. You then, when you read the Human Rights Commission report, you then realize that there were four respondents there. First respondent was Addington Hospital, the second respondent was Inkosi Albert Luthuli, the third respondent was HOD, the fourth respondent was the MEC. And answering your questions, I said to the Human Rights Commission, I humbly apologize for not having seen your correspondence to me, because it is law to comply and work with Chapter 9 institutions. There was no reason whatsoever for me not to. I have worked with Chapter 9 institutions, and I've quoted public protector where for certain things that were happening in the Department of Health, I had to appear before the public protector in KwaZulu-Natal, in Pretoria, really worked quite extensively with them, so there could not have been any reason to ignore another Chapter 9 institution. We went through that, and therefore, that's why we agreed that our submissions that are now before them are detailing certain things that if we had had time, we would have detailed them long before, including the Accountant General's report, including our DG's report on how they've supported us on all these irregularities that were there in the terms of procurement. So that is now a matter behind, and they accepted my apology, and that's why they are even willing and available to engage with the reports and the reports that were submitted. Hence, I'm actually happy because some of the advices that we have given to them, not advices, suggestions that we have given to them to talk to other leaders in this country who, among other things, the minister supported me when I went to Switzerland. He was going to another meeting in Switzerland, I think World Health Assembly, and then he then handed over me to an Ambassador Abdul there, where I went to Varian company to actually report of the challenge that we were facing with TechMed, which subsequently then made the chief procurement officer to leave and go to US the following month to go and deal with these matters. So we cannot explain why, when there's so much extensive investigation that is done regarding certain irregularities done by a particular company, that prosecution has not happened. So, but we hope and wish that you'll also be interested on that matter and maybe assist if you could. Yes, I am informed that doctors, yes, they need to be trained, because a machine is not something that doctors will always know. The doctors will know what to get out of that machine, but for them to actually deal with the machine, whatever that is, they need to be trained, and I'm informed that there's sometimes the training might be delayed, but they all have now been trained how to use all the accelerators and all the machines there. One of the other challenges that we have as a department, Honorable Mahlalela, you were talking about management is, in the department, we are just one other unfortunate situation where we have never had a stability with the CFO for the past 3.5 years. And that issue is very historical, and it is something that the Premier is always assisting to get it sorted, and we hope it will. Because the absence of a CFO in a department as large as health has its own problems in terms of stabilizing supply chain management, stabilizing financial management. I mean, we every year hope to get a better audit outcome, but this financial year, our audit outcome was worse than last year, and they are pointing to issues related to the management of finances. So those are issues that maybe with time will then be sorted out. Let me just deal with the other question that was raised by MP Ncube Ndaba. If Gauteng is providing support for pensions, I think it's very luxurious, because Gauteng is a very reasonably small province. We have no choice. We have to. Patients from A.G. Asha Memorial who may need to get a service, I think, because Albert Luthuli, will have to travel 4 hours. So there are patient transport pulling our patients from the periphery, all of them into the center. Because as the minister indicated, no matter how hard you try, you can never get a cardiologist sitting in Nongoma, never in oncology sitting in Nongoma. So these super specialities will always be at the center. So you must provide, without disadvantaging patients in the rural areas, support for them to be transported into the center. But these are the presentations we made today to say we are likely to get another oncology services stronger at Ngwelezane. It's even going to make patients not even to be transported for that 4 hours to Durban, but transported just for 2 hours from Nongoma to Ngwelezane and get sorted out there so that they miss going to Durban. So we are also keen. This is why sometimes we have a program supported by our ambulance or fly the doctor, where we say it's much easier to fly a doctor to Matateni than to bring 20 patients to be reviewed in Durban. So that also is working for us. Rather keep patients there, transport doctors to go and visit the far distance, so that at the end of the day you are not seen to be disadvantaging patients from the rural areas. I don't know from the comments raised by Honorable James, and specifically the comments that she raised with regards to Professor Glenn Thompson. If you probably follow the news, whatever that was actually alleged that Professor Glenn Thompson had done was since cleared up. Please make sure that part is covered from your side. So it also, I'm trying to say, Honorable James, what you were raising, how many oncology patients are there in the province? You can't, it's a moving target. What we had yesterday is different than today, because doctors today are busy at Matateni, Kopo, diagnosing patients that are going to go to an oncology program. And patients and doctors in Swaziland, in Mozambique, are busy wanting to refer. So at any given time, you cannot give an accurate number. We could always estimate to say how many here now. But oncology services that are very wide are covering that wide range, and doctors are diagnosing at any given time. So I think also it actually covers what you are requiring to say what's happening at Kwamsane. Kwamsane, yes, they would be seen at Ngwelezane, but for now we provide transport, not that even if they are disadvantaged by geography, we provide transport to move them to Durban for now, and they are seen there. Intervention of private oncologists. You actually wanted to know how long is this intervention by private oncologists. I think they are very sympathetic to our situation, and they are aware, and it will be until we are out of, when we get our own full-time doctors, then they will decline to assist. But what's the advantage? Why? Because already here and there we have machines. I think because Albert to live in Addington, what we discuss with them is not what we used to do 4 or 5 years ago, sending our patients to Parklands Hospital in Overport or elsewhere, because that was expensive. Because we have an equipment, is to request their professional services. into our own hospitals, because all we need is for them to come and advise and say to this group of doctors, this is how we do it, this is how we do it. Because if you send patients out into the private sector, it becomes expensive if they have to also give us their, not only their professional support, but also using their facilities. So this is working very well for us. Honorable Thembe Kwayo, you raised the issues of days. We are sure of these numbers that at Grace Hospital about 100 to 120 per day, because that is a team of our full-time doctors who are there who have to deliver this much. Vis-a-vis what we are talking about, that includes about 100 to 200 per month, because they will come and go. So, but all of them, they will be clearing up the backlog. We are also confident that these numbers that are here at Inkosi Albert Luthuli, at Inkosi Albert Luthuli, the machines are there. The system continues. And those doctors, all that we don't have is our full time. But from Rainbow Oncologists, they are there Monday to Friday. We negotiated with them, especially when we noticed that we are not getting our full time quite soon, to extend their hours that they assist us. So we are able to monitor their being present there, of Monday to Friday, the four of them. So we are confident that these numbers that are reflected here is like Inkosi Albert Luthuli is functioning normally now. It's only thing that we don't have is those doctors as being our full-timers. But because they are coming from a big pool of oncologists, who I mentioned about 15 different, so they can afford to spare us two full-time oncologists per day for the next 5 days, and they will go on with that process until we are able to be smooth sailing on those processes. Maybe if you go to Honorable Sheikh, we are grateful to say that, but mainly your questions, I think they were, you asked Honorable Sheikh, these machines at Eddington, Richards Bay, I wanted to say what you were asking, I just wrote the answer here, I can't remember how we put the question, that this plan that we have, that the Richards Bay will, among other things, assist to deal with the backlog. So this issue of dysfunctional HTS is something that has actually come in as a, it was a very funny unit, which I said they must deal with it. You know, it can't be an advisory unit, but having to fight with the supply chain in terms of it. So it was at that level where you did not know how many supply chain units you have in the department. You have this HTS and supply chain, and it goes on and on. Decisions are not being made. People are fighting unnecessarily. So we said, look, rather you have a dysfunctional supply chain, which is now being supported both by national and provincial treasury, and get out of this HTS, which you don't even understand what it is and why it comes to a level of not being an advisory, but it comes to a level where it almost fighting with the team. The last one was Honorable Kopa, no? Honorable James, I think it's just an information that is not the same as ours. The commissioner, we were alarmed by a very strange report where MPL Kiga writes to the Speaker of the Legislature complaining about something that is probably a hearsay information to him. Because what one would have expected would have been a commissioner or whoever was denied access in our hospitals writing to the speaker and say, MEC, Lomo, HOT, so-and-so, whatever, I have been denied. So we do not have that. That is why I received that information, and I sent our legal team to go to the commissioner to say, did we do this? Where is this that we denied you access? And I can categorically say that they don't have that information that we deny them access. Now, that is a matter which Honorable Kika must go and then address the speaker in the legislature about, where he made allegations that the MEC stopped some commissioner or commissioners visiting a particular hospital and they probably has evidence to that. But when you ask the actual person who's supposed to be aggrieved, he has no knowledge of having been denied that access. Now, we just wonder, why is he a kuthala kangaka? So that part is going to be left to be handled at that way, but we don't have that information. Let me go to the ones that were raised. Now, I was a bit confused, Honorable Kopane, from the other contributions you made, because one, you made mention that the commissioner says they have got 300 people died, and suddenly you say we do not provide them a list. Now, I don't know which is which. And we know, because the other part, which maybe I should mention, because in the whole host of issues, the only person who did not respond, that is why this matter of a Human Rights Commission, I decided to handle it myself, because there were certain responses that were made by the HOD to the Human Rights Commission, and they were part of the report. Now, it would probably disadvantage him to be dealing with this matter, because I'm dealing with it, one as an MSC, but number two as a respondent who allegedly never responded. So if you check that, I don't have an information that talks about what we supplied to the Human Rights Commission. I don't know about this standard that you have, standard people died, because clearly in that report, which we can give to you, that we wrote to the Human Rights Commission, we specifically mentioned that you just cannot plug a list of people, then you say these people died of this and that. That information is available or should be sourced from the cancer registry. That part we mentioned. So I don't know, because your question mentioned that you know about the 300, but you also want to know the list. Now, we don't have that 300, and we have not responded to the Human Rights Commission, who is the custodian of these investigations, about the number 300. The matter in the court is a very funny matter. Look, I don't even know how to address it. We have what the minister makes reference to, a particular investigation that was done by provincial treasury with regards to a certain award of a particular service, of a particular company awarded to deal with this, that, and the other in terms of provision of a service at Attington Hospital. It is actually confirmed in that report that that issue was very irregular, and therefore it must be corrected. We now are aware that that person has since taken us to court on another process, because we are applying what actually was in the report, and therefore that person is taking us to court to say he demands the service that he was supposed to have been providing to continue that service. So that matter, we are waiting for the court to rule on it, but that is where it is standing. Thanks, Honorable.
Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will first start by allowing the DG to answer specifically three questions, because this is important. They were asked by three honorable members here. The first one was Imam Shaikh, about the gap between the people on the ground and the leaders. Well, while he also included members of parliament, but also obviously that applies to the Department of Health, that there is a gap. It was also raised by Honorable James, there's no communication between national and province. And again, very elaborately by Honorable Mahlalela about the early warning system between the national department, whether it's caused by concurrency, etc. Chairperson, I want the DG to answer, because these gaps and lack of warning systems and all that, it's not true that they don't exist. The DG will have to answer how the system works, because the fact that certain things are happening, which like life is demanding this, does not necessarily mean that there's never been norms and policies and standards that have been drawn up or supervision by the national department. If, you know, it doesn't mean that. If some people or officials are intent on doing something wrong, I mean, it's like corruption, for instance. It does not mean that there's no PFMA, there are no rules and all that, but corruption happens all the time, and the SIU and the Hawks and all that keep on chasing people all over the place. So, but I just want the DG to explain to you how the system works through MINMEC, technical MINMEC, and, you know, DG, please.
Good morning, honorable members. In response to the questions that have been asked, I'm going to answer them at a policy level, operational level, technical level, as well as administrative level, as to how the system works. The first one at a policy level, Chair, and I don't want again to refer members, honorable members, to the Act. The Act is very clear about definition of roles and functions. In particular, the National Health Act says this is what the head of department in a province does, and this is what the Director General does, this is what the Minister does, this is what the MEC does. But it goes further to say what the National Health Council, what the expectations are in terms of the National Health Council, but also the provincial health councils, as well as district health councils. So the system that is put in place, honorable members, now at a technical level, and this is when we come up with norms and standards, with guidelines, with strategies, we have what we call the technical committees of the National Health Council. These are committees that do work, and they are made up of officials of the National Department of Health, as well as Provincial Department of Health. The following committees, Chair, exist. The first committee is on human resource for health. The second one is on maternal, child, and women's health. The third is the one that deals with hospitals. The fourth is NISA, is the Health Information System of South Africa. And there's one that deals with district health systems. And there's a finance one, which is led by the CFO. Now, each DDG, if in the absence of a DDG, chairs these committees, or they are chaired by a chief director. We have a planning one, we have a pharmaceutical one, we have the one on emergency medical services, health technology. Now, they meet regularly. What they do, Chair, they prepare a schedule well in advance, beginning of the year, to say these are their activities for the year, and that is shared with the HODs. Some of them do not do that, but we have a resolution that should happen. But within the department, we have very specific programs which we have established. We established a unit called Provincial Support Team, which is led by a chief director, Mr. Hartley Nevutalo. We created that specifically. What they do, they visit two districts per province so that they can cover as many districts as possible. Now, at an operational level, Chair, what they do, they set up, they've got what I call, and it's not a political expression, Chair, and I apologize for that, they've got what they call a multi-party service delivery district and facility forum. So they go to a district, and in some instances they go to a facility. They are made up of provincial treasury, meaning when they meet at a district level or facility level, in attendance there must be somebody from provincial treasury, from a district, from the provincial health department, and also under the direction of the chief director. And I must say, Chair, even in my absence,
the HODs at least have attended these meetings, even under the leadership of a chief director. They have not said they cannot attend a meeting because a chief director is chairing. It's a system that seems to be working. They hold hearings, they also do reviews, and they look at reports, and they've come up with a dashboard. And in this dashboard, they look at how well provinces are doing. But the focus at the moment is financial. But in addition, Chair, we have what we call a forum of CFOs that meet regularly under the leadership of Mr. Ian van der Merwe, who is the CFO at National. Now, the CFO forum has an early warning system called non-negotiables. Now, in the non-negotiables, Chair, we've got a list of things that we track on monthly basis. Equipment, medicines, cleaning agents, we can share the list. Now, what we pick up on a regular basis as we do an analysis of the report, we can pull the KZN one, for instance, and show you, is that from the budget process, you'll see the under allocation. For instance, I can already tell you that the common area of under allocation or under budgeting would be pharmaceuticals, maybe because of the high burden of HIV/AIDS in the province. It will be laboratories, it will be vaccines and blood. If we do an analysis for KZN, that would be the case. What the CFO does in the forum and this multi-party service delivery district and facilities forum, they go back to check what the spending patterns are and why the province has under-allocated, because that should trigger a message to Treasury to say, please adjust or do some variant. So that is the second one, Chair. The next one is the pharmaceutical one. We track that one, Chair, I must say, religiously. Religiously because we have what I call an RX solution, which has been installed in basically almost all our hospitals except the central hospitals. There are still a few that have other systems, and we said where other systems exist and they work, they don't have to be replaced with RX solutions. And of course, Chair, you might have heard that we have SVS in the clinics. Now, what we do with these systems, we draw reports. We draw reports for two reasons. The first one is to know why there's a shortage of supply. The second, in fact, immediately triggers a response in a sense that it will say there's lack of supply because the supply has not been paid. It triggers action on our part in a sense that immediately I get those reports, I write letters to HODs to say by when will the payments be done and so on, because that is done in accordance with the provisions of PFMA of 30-day payment. We then have the district clinical support teams, Chair. They track specifically the maternal, child, and women's health. They have a dashboard. And in the dashboard, you'll see which districts are struggling. And we can already tell you that in those, the district clinical specialist teams need intervention. So Dr. Pile leads this, and he goes specifically to where we see red in the dashboard. The next one is the clinics, Chair. And I can use this as an opportunity. This is it's a little bit worrisome because there's some bit of cheating on our colleagues. In a sense that when we go and send teams, we do what we call peer reviews. We'll take a team from KZN and send them, maybe KZN and Free State, send them to go and check what's happening in KZN, in Mpumalanga, for instance. Or meaning we don't get the same people checking themselves. We take teams from different provinces. But when they hear that the teams are coming, they go and borrow next door. They will go maybe and borrow so that when the team comes, it appears as if they've got machines, they've got medicine, so that they are compliant. And it is not helpful, because for us, when the teams have gone, when they come back, they come with a report that says things are okay. In the meantime, they've gone to borrow next door. So, Chair, that's why I say at a clinic level, it's a, for us, that is still a concern. It happens from time to time, and we allow for whistleblowing, and I've allowed for that. When that comes up, I get an SMS or a message that they went to borrow equipment next door. So I know already. And what we do, we then send the team on a different day. We cancel. They don't go, they go elsewhere. So that's an area of concern for us, Chair. But then we have what we have scheduled a technical NHC meetings, Chair. Our approach to those meetings is that we don't want to meet to prepare for NHC, which is chaired by the minister. We hold our meetings in provinces. So our meetings are preceded by our provincial management teams. They have to tell us what are they doing on finance, what are they doing. So they present to us, we interrogate their reports, and if time allows, Chair, we visit facilities. So this is a system that we have. So it seems to be working, and the beauty about it is that in those meetings, it's not just national. We get other provincial heads of departments to be part of those so that they can also share experiences with the provincial. Like, for instance, if we visit Eastern Cape, it will be heads of departments from other provinces that are part of that meeting when the province presents to us. And as they present, they also interrogate the issues. It's not just us at national. They also ask questions. When we go and visit, they also go with us. It's a very robust system. So, Chair, the other one, which I think we still do, is the planning. Our teams that do planning, they spend their whole lives in provinces. If I look for them, they're not available. They're not in the office. They're always out there. They interrogate plans. They ask questions. So we've put that system. The only thing that we've actually suspended for now is the district health expenditure reviews, because we're conducting those reviews, but the manner in which the data was used was not very useful and helpful, because we'll do the review, but the outcome of the review would not be implemented. So we stopped that, and we've replaced it with the provincial support teams that are led by Hartley Nebutalo. Then, Chair, we have what we call in NHC, a tracking system. In every NHC meeting, the standard is that we have what we call an HR matrix. The province must tell us, do they have money for posts or don't they? And which posts are vacant and so on. So they have to prepare those reports regularly. We've just updated it recently to accommodate the number of students that will be coming back from Cuba, but also the plans about those who have bursaries. They need to tell us whether they'll be able to meet those contractual obligations. The second that we track is the non-negotiables, like I said, on finance, to check whether are we spending money on these key priority areas. And we can, where we see red, we follow up on those based on the dashboard. The infrastructure spending we track, but we also look at whether projects are on track or not. We then have the information systems. This one, Chair, we've got what is called HPRS. We've installed now in about 1,900 facilities. And I'm hoping that by the end of the year it will be 2,800. That's what I was told. When I last checked, it was 1,900 in June. We have a total of 12 million patients that have been registered on the system. We are hoping that that number will grow. We also have, this is now the health system as it functions in our reporting system across board and follow-ups with provinces. We also have quarterly meetings, Chair, quarterly meetings with health professionals. Now, these are doctors out there, independent of the provinces. We've got quarterly meetings with SAMA. We've got quarterly meetings that are held by the chief nursing officers with all the nursing formations to check what the issues are. She meets also with LEP. It's formalized meetings that have been established that where we track problems. We, even with the march, the doctors will raise concerns and write formally. So there are these scheduled meetings throughout the year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Teacher.
Yeah, Chairperson, when Honorable Mashalela was asking this question, he asked, is this a problem of concurrency? You know, why are there always these problems? And I heard the issue of life is demanding also being quoted. Maybe then your next question is, after this elaborate expansion by the DG, why are we still having these problems? I think that's your next question. Yeah, Chairperson, let me give the example of life is demanding. Whether there were no systems or checks and balances, or whether they were breached deliberately. We held, I'm just giving you that as an example. On the issue of mental health, we held a mental health summit in 2013. We even invited the World Health Organization to come and guide us. And we called psychiatrists in the country, and we produced a document, Mental Health 2013. It says 2013 to 2022. It elaborates exactly what needs to happen, at what level, where, and how. Now, you are aware that Gauteng went out to do what they did. If you read the Ombudsperson's report clearly, when the Ombuds asked, was the minister told? They said, no, we didn't have to. We are another sphere of government. We have got our own rights as a sphere of government. You are aware that then, through these systems, the DG picked it up and called the HOD of Gauteng and tried their best to stop this to an extent where they even went to court on this matter with the NGOs and all that. If you read the report, you realize how one chief director was trying to chase Gauteng to get this information, and they were just running away from him. So we do have system, but when people are intent on breaking the systems, for instance, the other check and balance, if you look at the National Mental Health Act, it says each province must have a mental health review board. No patient, and I'm repeating, no patient can be discharged from any institution to the other unless the mental health review board signs off. They have to sign it off. And how were patients, how did their life is demanding without the mental health review board? We put it there. It was breached deliberately. And that's why the Umbat said the chairperson of that board must be charged. And in that board, if you check, it's not ordinary people. They say a magistrate or an advocate, a psychiatrist, all those very senior people allowed this to happen. We put it in place. You know, it's something like you can take a horse to the river, but you can't force it to drink. It does happen like that. Now let's come to this issue of KZN. I'm not going to hide the fact that we detected a problem as far back as 2014 in Addington, and the NEC has mentioned it. Then I asked what the problem was all about, and he said, no, they've got this oncology equipment, which was bought in 2008, long before I arrived, because I'm not older than 2008 in the portfolio. He then said, built in this equipment, in the contract to buy equipment, is maintenance, because this equipment has to be maintained. He then said, but the company is charging us double. They've been paid a lump sum at the beginning, but they are now charging double. When we refuse to charge, to pay, they stop maintaining the equipment. I then advised the province, I said, because there will be trouble, go and pay that double. Province said, how? We're going to be arrested. It's against the PFMA. I said, go and pay the double and keep the receipts and invoices. And you'll hand them over to the Auditor General, because if you stop paying them the double, then they stop maintaining the equipment, then people will suffer. That was my view. I said, in health, you look at people first before money, and you'll be able to explain to the Auditor General. The DG was once accused by the Auditor General for irregular expenditure, because when he realized provinces were not paying the National Health Laboratory Services, he took a conditional grant and went to pay directly to save, because the laboratories were going to collapse, and if they collapse, many people will die. She went to that extent, but the Auditor General said, this is irregular expenditure. You should not have done it. But we say here we're dealing with people, and sometimes when you balance your books, but people die, you realize that you have got to do it in favor of people than balancing books. And we have to explain to that. And I was hoping that will be an explanation to the Auditor General if he finds out that they are paying double. And look, from there I can't go to that province or hospital and make sure that is happening every day. I've given advice. And then from there I took the MEC, as he said, to Geneva. Because we heard that this company called TechMed, that is doing all these doubles and all that, has got headquarters in Geneva. And I gave him to Ambassador Abdul Mindi. I said, Ambassador, there's a company that is supplying equipment in our country and they are causing these problems. Can you take the MEC and go with him and help him, because you stay here in Geneva, to lodge a complaint with this company that they must stop doing this? I did that. And the MEC went with Abdul Minti and all that. When they came back, they learned that, no, that company called TechMed is just an agency. It's just an agent. The actual manufacturers of this equipment are in the United States. The people who manufacture this equipment are in the United States. Then, the Treasury, led by the Chief Procurement Office and the Accountant General, actually went there to do an investigation. And they found that the company is not only fleecing Northwest, KZN, it's also fleecing Northwest and Gauteng. They investigated, and when they came back, we were told they've got information which is submitted to Rehawks to arrest. Chairperson, I'm going to ask you today, because I don't control the Hawks. I believe as members of parliament we have got power. I still want to understand why people are not arrested in this case, yes, including Adintian and all that, which from 2014 we have been chasing. I still want to understand, because we are told that the information is there. Perhaps you must even, I don't know what power you have got, you must call the Chief Procurement Officer, Kenneth Brown, who eventually left government, because he was leading this team and he said, Minister, what this company is doing all over the country is causing havoc on the issue of equipment, and people have to be arrested. I will rest and get happy when I see people being arrested in KZN, in Gauteng, in Northwest, all over, and perhaps you have got that power to chase that type of report. So I'm trying to show you that the fact that there's trouble doesn't mean one did not try, but you have got a limited way to which you can help as a national minister. The other thing, Honorable Mahlala, is you ask if this concurrency, let me answer you directly. I understand they say health and education are a concurrent function. But the four key ones which brought us here, which cost life is demanding, which cost the Human Rights Commission to KZN, are not concurrent. They are provincial. The four main ones, yes, the four main ones on which you are questioning us every day are purely provincial. They are not concurrent. It's HR. Many people who have got problems with HR write to me. I've got many doctors and nurses who write to me and say, I've been fired. Please, Minister, intervene. I've been fired. Now, when I read them what the actual labor law is saying, they can't believe it. I don't know whether even members know here. If somebody has got a problem or war with the provincial department of health, the MEC must set up a DC process and put up a chairperson of that DC. If the chairperson say dismissal and the person is not satisfied, they appeal to the MEC. If the MEC still supports the dismissal, they go to the CCMA. If the CCMA still say dismissal, they go to Labour Ward. I mean, yes, I work with Labour Ward, yes.
Well, we'll apologize because we're
a doctor. They go to Labour Court. In that whole cascade, the minister is not mentioned anywhere. You are a spectator. The best you can do is to phone the MEC and negotiate with them, and we do, and he tells you, no, minister. When you say, no, you've been very hard on this person, it's going to affect your services, no, minister, we want this person to go. That's how Limpopo once lost one of the best, Limpopo once had the best ophthalmology unit in the whole country, in Mangweng. And the person who served there very diligently had to leave. It was very painful for me. But I don't have power over human resources or who gets hired there. Because sometimes you confront MECs, how did you hire this person? Because it's wrong, they tell you it's an instruction from my premier. And you, yes, no, it does happen. I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to. There is, I don't know why DG left this. There is a situation where she intervened, tried to ask a provincial HOD to take people to DC. They were taken to DC and fired. And immediately after they were fired, they were brought back. When the DG asked, they said, no, the Premier's office instructed that they must be brought back. You don't have power over all those things as a minister. So is HR. Same as finance. You are aware that apart from conditional grant, the money that is called this money, equitable share, once it arrives in a provincial department, you have got no say over it at all. And I will give you an example. In 2010, because people do tip us apart from these issues DG has mentioned, the College of Medicine approached me as far back as 2010. Minister, we have got vacancies to train 1,000 specialists. We are talking of a shortage of specialists here today. We have got vacancies to train 1,000 specialists. But unlike in law or commerce or engineering, in medicine, for any patient to train as a specialist, the province, not me, the province must create a registrar's post. A registrar is a specialist in training. The university can't train you unless that province has created a registrar's post. And they were telling me there are 1,000. Knowing that there's a shortage of specialists, including the oncologist you mentioned here today, I went to Treasury, directly to the minister. I explained to him the danger of this. And the minister gives 600 million to put up, to create registrar's post so that we have got specialists in future. 600 million. But these officials came to me and said, minister, the minister has instructed us to put 600 million to you for the training of registrars. But according to DORA, which is passed by members of parliament, yes, Division of Revenue Act, this money must be sent directly to provinces. I told them clear that if you send it there, this thing is not going to happen. This register thing is not, please, give us this money so that we specifically go province by province and say, you get so many registers. They said, no, minister, DORA. Yes, we have to obey it, minister. It's a law. You are a member of parliament. You are part of this law. So you can't tell us to breach it. that money was sent directly to provincial departments. But DORA again says once it arrived there as equitable share, the provincial treasury has got the right to use it for whatever they want. You can't dictate to them. And this is what happened as far back as that time. So the issues of finance. Then there's some way where one newspaper said I lied to the public about the thing called moratorium. They might be right. This issue of moratorium on the filling of posts. You saw it here on the doctor's march. And they said the minister has lied. Yes. In the way they understood it, I've lied. Because this is what happened. When the government realized that they were having problems financially, especially with CEO, what is it called?
COE.
Compensation of employees is very high in government. Then they said, no, we must stop just hiring people. You can't hire people until where you are unable to provide services. I'm a member of MINCOMBAT, Ministerial Committee on Budget. I then raised the issue that if you do that, you might actually find us closing our hospitals. Then it was agreed right from MINCOMBAT and accepted by Cabinet that when you do a moratorium, doctors, nurses, you know, pharmacists, you know, etc., including teachers, must not be included there. If you go to one of the speeches of the Minister of Finance, I can't remember that year, it was right there in Parliament. It was coming from us in MINCOMBAT that when provinces do this moratorium of hiring not to expand the government compensation of employees, they must not do it to these groups of people. It's there. If you go to the Hansard, you'll realize that the Minister of Finance read that statement because I specifically asked him because I wanted it to be known by the whole country and provinces that they can't do a moratorium on the hiring of doctors, etc. I specifically asked. You can go and ask a former Minister of Finance, Minister Bravin. I said, please put it. When you read your budget speech, the whole country is listening. Then they must know this issue. And that's what I went around preaching, that no, there's no moratorium. And people going on TV and radio saying moratorium, when I know there's no law about that, because that's what we agreed on. But what happens? You go and check. And you find that, no, there is a moratorium, but it doesn't occur in the manner in which you expect it. They are hiding it. For instance, in some provinces, Treasury just said, no, no, no. You are not dealing with your finances very well. We are not allowing you to hire anybody. Anybody we hire, Treasury must approve. Then a post is advertised. A doctor is interviewed, passes the interview. They send the approval to Treasury. They never approve. They don't say yes or no. They just don't respond. They just keep quiet until it goes away. Then the people come and say, it's moratorium. I said, no ways. There's nothing like that. We agreed in MINCOMBAT, the Minister of Finance read it. They just do that in almost all provinces. Or they'll tell you it's in the Premier's office. They want to do an approval there. But they just don't approve. So these are the problems. Then comes procurement. You are aware that procurement is a provincial function. It's even worse for us as politicians. If you poke your nose there, you are the first ones who are going to persecute us. What does the minister want in procurement issues? Procurement and supply chain. You then ask, why is this happening? Don't know, it's an instruction from my executive council. They said we must follow this type of procurement. When we put Limpopo under Section 100, we found that the RT transversal, which were from Treasury, they were drawn by Treasury. What is the transversal contract? Where the Treasury says people who can supply this function. And it's mostly for consumables because they move very fast. You can't issue a tender or quotation every day because these are things you use every day. Treasury asks companies to apply, and they apply, they assess them, and give a list, and say every time you want toilet paper, you want soap, you want this, just phone this company. They've been pre-qualified in other ways. And we found that they just took it and threw it away. They were not following it. And they were getting three quotations because, I'm going to allow the DG to add a few things because she's writing notes for me here to advise me on some of the things which are right, but I'll give you a chance because these are extremely important. Then the issue of maintenance of building. There's no province or no MEC that never complain about public works. There's none. And me too, when I'm an MEC, I know. And time and again, we'll put systems to make sure that we check them. Then they will come and say, no, my province has changed this system. They are following another system. Altogether, Minister, can you go and talk to them? So these four areas are not concurrent. They are purely provincial. And this is our weakness. That's why one of the recommendations from the UMBAS about life is the main is that we must review the National Health Act and do away with these things and also review the Mental Health Act. But if you look at the white paper on NHI, we are saying if this system must work, we must amend 12 pieces of legislation. It's there on the NHI. And we choose them because of this. We know what doesn't work, regardless of what you do, regardless of having all these committees the DG is talking about, it simply doesn't work. And so we said those laws must be reviewed. So that is the issue of concurrency. It's concurrency on paper, but the most powerful functions to run the healthcare system are provincial. They are not concurrent. We just come with policies, etc. If they want to put them aside, they just do so. Put this policy aside and move the other way. And that is the frustration we're having. Now, the questions from Honorable Shaikh, unfortunately, is gone. Just fast. He said, why did I say the two machines that are out of order won't change anything? I never said so. I just said it won't cause the crisis that they are faced with there. Because they still, even if the two are not working, they still have got more than other provinces. But there are no crises in those provinces. That's what I said. And he said, what if they are in far apart from each other? If you check this report about audit I gave you about oncology, before this Addington problem, KwaZulu-Natal was the only province in the whole country that had oncology machines in 3 centers. All these other provinces I mentioned, 2 centers. Western Cape, Tygerberg, Grooteskier, Gauteng, Charlotte Matleke, Steve Biko, Northwest, Klerksdorp, Free State, Universitas. This was the only province that had them in 3 centers. And Nkosi Albert Lithuanian, which has got 3, and Addington, they are about 1 or 2 kilometers apart. So it shouldn't be a crisis. It's a crisis of management, of the way things were managed, because they could have used all those facilities like they are in other provinces. That's basically what I was trying to say. The question, what are the problems with oncologists in the country? There are no problems with oncologists in the country. There are problems with specialists in the country. There is a shortage. It might be that some super specialities have got more shortage than others. For instance, when we opened Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital, I disclosed that for pediatric oncologists, we have got 7 in the whole country, in both public and private. Lest you think private is faring better. There's a total number of 7 pediatric oncologists in the whole country, in both public and private. So these are problems. Now, Chairperson, I'm sure you might be aware. While it is worse in sub-Saharan Africa, the United Nations has taken up this issue of shortage of staff. They had put up a commission in 2015, which was co-chaired by the then president of France and the president of South Africa, and they put even Nobel Peace laureates in there. They said by 2030, the world must have hired 40 million health workers because the shortage is just scary. And they put up systems there on what must happen. They even said they will go, the Secretary of United Nations will go and call ministers of finance around the world and tell them that hiring people in health is not expenditure. It must be classified as investment because they regard it as a lot of expenditure that We need 40 million health workers by 2030. Please release all these monies and make sure that it happens. It's because of this shortage that is always there. The issue of Imam asked, should we use private oncologists? By all means, yes. If you look at the white paper on NHI, I kept on insisting. The aim of NHI is not to kill the private sector, but is to make it possible for South Africans to utilize both public and private at the same time. Look what the MEC has said, how the system works. 80% of specialists are in private sector. But the moment your money is finished, they throw you to the public sector where they know there's nobody. If there is NHI, that type of thing won't happen. We'll be able to use them. These 7 pediatric oncologists will be used by whether you are in public or private. That's why we need NHI to balance all these things. Now, Honorable Kopan, please, Chairperson, I want to be understood, least people think I'm hiding something. I got very scared when I read that 300 people died because of what happened in KZN. And I said, how did anybody arrive at this figure of 300? The simple reason being that, Chairperson, there's nobody in the country who knows. This issue of who died of what is a very complex issue. That's why. These are issues not handled by anybody. They are handled by special agencies, if you want to know. That's why it has to be handled by State SA. Even the information at the international level to check how many people die in each and every country, they will never allow it, accept this from any other source except State SA. Or the Medical Research Council, which do rapid mortality surveys. So because of that, I phoned the chairperson, Honorable Kopan, of Human Rights Commission. I said, where do you get this figure from? Because we do not have it, and I don't understand who will ever have such a figure. He said, that thing, I don't know where it comes from. I said, it looks like it's in the papers. They said they got it from you. He said, it's not in my report. Go and read my report. That figure is not there. And the reason that it's not there is simply because we don't know. Nobody knows. Why am I saying so, Chairperson? When people die, as to what they die of, it's a very highly technical work which must be checked very carefully. Because what if you have got cancer, or there are 10 of you who have got cancer, and all of you die of other causes? Maybe you also have diabetes or HIV, or even a car accident or murder and all that, simply because you were registered in that hospital for cancer. And if we start registering you as a cancer death, we are going to distort statistics. That is why, Chairperson, we have put up what is called a cancer register. Last week, I was still reading a letter from the Cancer Alliance. We have got a huge alliance of people who are dealing with cancer, who were complaining even about the cancer register. That is not accurate. Because it has got the backlog of 10 years. They are studying all these things very carefully, going to Home Affairs, checking death certificate, checking this, if there's no other underlying cause of death, and write it. Up to so far, since we established the cancer register, we have just cleared the 5-year backlog. We are at 2013, right? Yes. We are still at 2013. In other words, we may know how many cancer patients died 2013 backwards, not 2014 forwards. We don't know, because they are still dealing with that backlog, because otherwise we'll put numbers there, which are just numbers, and they will alarm people. So that's why the Human Rights Commission said it's not them. I just want to plead with this committee. Let's respect that. Figures of death of whatever nature must only be authenticized if they come from the Medical Research Council or from State SA or from Cancer Register. We even have to send this lady, Sanja, the director for non-communicable disease, we have to send her to Geneva, to what is that structure?
It's
international, yes.
The International Agency for Research
yes.
in Cancer.
International Agency for Research in Cancer, to go and learn how the cancer register must work in South Africa. Because there was never no cancer register before. You, as members of parliament, you are busy now.
You called the DG 3 weeks ago with a law called NAPISA.
NHLS.
No, NAPISA and NHLS. Yes, yes. That NAPISA is going to be the first institute in the country that records these things and become formalized. How many people suffer from cancer? How many died from it? How many from... We don't have that information. It's just guesswork at the present moment. So it was not possible to give any answer to the Human Rights Commission. That's why they said this figure of 300 is not from them. But you know, in the fast-moving world of Twitter and all that, once a number is flagged in one area, it catches fire and becomes authentic all over until you don't even know where its source is. The other issue is about, Honorable Kopane, is about the matter in court. Let me explain what is in court. As I said, the others have been investigated by Treasury. When there was this war between KZN and TechMed, this company which I said is being investigated by Treasury, where they were about whether you pay double and all that, the department then discarded that company, went to another company and gave them a contract to repair to those machines. And I think that's perhaps what also led to the immediate collapse. The report that is being released on Friday, the forensic, was investigating that. But the report from, yes, we'll hear on Friday who said what. I'm eagerly waiting because I heard about that report. I've been pleading with the Premier. That forensic report must be released and implemented. I've been pleading, and I'm happy that this week she told me when I was complaining. I said, we've been in KwaZulu-Natal for the whole week. Any mention of this forensic, he said, no. I've just received a letter that on Friday we must come to Treasury in KZN and they are going to look into this. So the report from the Human Rights Commission, if you read the first recommendation, they said regardless of whatever court case, the equipment must be repaired. And when they were following that report, that company that was given that tender after TechMed was kicked out is the one that went to court. Yes, they took the... In fact, they interdicted and said, you can't repair this equipment without us. Whereas the Human Rights Commission said, forget about them. They have failed. But now, I phoned the Human Rights Commission and said, perhaps you might not have power to change tenders. I then approached the Chief Procurement Officer and asked him, does the Human Rights Commission have got the right in law to say a tender must be cancelled? Because we have got to, you know, the human rights issue, we have got to save human rights. The Chief Procurement Officer said, no, they can't because it's not their competence. What they should have said was that there is a problem with this tender. Please let them refer to National Treasury for the Chief Procurement Officer to do something about it. They are the ones who can look at it and cancel it. That's what I was told. But unfortunately, this matter has just happened, and unfortunately, it's in the hands of a judge. And I don't undermine judges. What if he might say that company is authentic? Yes, but then we are lucky. Because on Friday, a forensic audit will show whether the company is authentic or not. Because the rumor I heard is that it might not be having the capacity to do the work that they've been given to do. So, fortunately, that issue will end up on Friday. Now, the other question from Honorable James, I think the question from the doctor there was were responded to by the other doctor. And I don't think I should be responding to Dr. Temengwa. I think the MEC has responded. Whether rural patients suffer on oncology, Chairperson, they don't. I told you oncology services are super specialty. They always exist only in teaching, in central hospitals. So what we do in rural area, because I've worked in a rural area, we have got what is called planned patient transport, where you take them. These are not even ambulances, it's just transport. Where after diagnosing them, we have got a timetable on how to convey them to these hospitals to get radiotherapy and come back, to get oncology and come back. So they don't suffer. Maybe it's the reason why. When I was working in Mapulaneng Hospital in Bushbuck Ridge in 1985, if you tell anybody that you are sending your relative to Barra, that's the time when Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital was still called Baragwanath and very popular. But when you tell people who are sending you a relative there, they start crying. When you ask them, they said there's no person in the village who came back from that hospital. Because every complicated cancer or whatever, we send there. And when eventually cancer patients, their survival rate is measured in 5 years. When you want to know whether this cancer is very dangerous or not, you say what is the 5-year survival rate, meaning how many people will still be alive from this cancer after 5 years. Even with the best treatment in the world, you know that there's a 5-year survival rate. If we say the 5-year survival rate is 10%, it means in this cancer we expect that after 5 years, only 10% of the patients will be alive. And you send them to all these big centers. That's why it's not easy to come up with that figure which people can easily mention. So the people in rural areas don't really suffer as such. The question about, I think Honorable Marshall, I have answered you because you asked about this issue of concurrency, which was the most important one. And I think, I've answered more or less all the questions. DG, I don't know whether you wanted to explain some few concepts again on the notes you are sending me.
No, Minister. Apologies. It was just to say, Minister, that you've got a ministerial advisory committee on cancer.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We don't work on these things alone. I've appointed a ministerial advisory on cancer. Fortunately, the person who's chairing it is a cancer survivor herself, and she knows what they go through and is deputized by a professor of oncology in one of the hospitals. I don't do any, even this breast cancer and cervical cancer report, which I said was at MINMEC, which led us to do this audit. We check with them. We are busy with the national cancer strategy around the country. And maybe let me add, why all of a sudden this cancer is becoming the talk of town? It's because it's becoming our new HIV AIDS chairperson. There is an explosion of non-communicable disease. On top of that explosion is high blood pressure, is diabetes, is cancer. I've been in the field of medicine for 34 years. I've never seen so many people suffering cancer. That's why I'm lobbying you. When we say cigarettes, no. Alcohol, no. Sugar, no. We're not just dreaming. We are seeing that we are losing control here and is outweighing our resources, both human, because it's suddenly many people. I mean, cancer used to affect elderly people. Now we see very young people in their 20s and 30s dying of cancer. It's just growing. So we have developed this strategy, especially about cervical and breast cancer. We're going to launch it very soon. Then we'll launch the overall strategy on cancer. We need something like the strategy we had on HIV/AIDS to deal with this problem of cancer, because its prevalence is now completely out of control, is exceeding the resources we have got in the country. It's just a new pandemic. That's why last week at the World Health Organization, the Africa region of the World Health Organization, which was held in Victoria Falls, this topic also came. What are we going to do? Because Africa used to carry the burden of HIV and TB. We are now having to face the burden of cancer and high blood pressure, and we're saying we can't afford another pandemic. We have to do everything to stop it. So my only way, rather than saying I'm going to supply you with oncologies or drugs and all that, is also to prevent. And prevention means abolishing some of the practices we do. Like I'm emphasizing on smoking, because the British American Tobacco Company are waking up after they've seen that Coca-Cola seems to be defeating us. And I said it in Zimbabwe, that Coca-Cola is busy poisoning our communities. And they promised them jobs. And I know here in government, when the minister said there must be sugar tax, people believe, no, we are just fighting and all that. No, what about jobs? Are we going to create those jobs for corpses? People are busy dying. It's not a joke. That's why they are busy dying from cancer and all that, which is caused by all these things. So we have got to take action. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, it's quarter past one. We have had a very elaborative questions and responses, but I can see Honourable Kopane's hand is up. She's insisting. And Mr. Mahlalela, try to be, not to be too long.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, for allowing me the last opportunity. Chair, I really appreciate the urgent intervention by the Minister, and we have heard that he has done what he's supposed to do in terms of his office and what the province is expected to do. But, Chair, I still believe that many people have died in this situation. I'll come in terms of the number, of which I believe people have to be held accountable. And according to the report of the Human Rights Commission, it is clear that the MEC should be held accountable. That is what is here. So we need to find, people need to be held accountable. I want the minister to tell us exactly when will those people be held accountable, because it's, according to the report, they said the MEC must be held accountable. Coming to the issue of the South African Human Rights Commission, MEC, when the South African Human Rights Commission were in Parliament, you will get the recordings, they clearly say that they were not allowed to do the site visit. It is not Dr. Kika who said so. They clearly said so. And in terms of the evidence of trying to contact you, they said they had tons of evidence before them showing they tried to contact your office. So I think somehow somebody is misleading this house. And Chair, in terms of the numbers of patients that people say that I talk about numbers here, there is a written question that was written by Dr. Kika here. The response is signed by Dr. Dlomo here to say that 2015 he reported to the, it's recorded in the health information system, that in 2015 there were 230 patients died. 2016, there is 229. And the other question was those patients, were any patients referred to any health facilities because of the problem? Definitely the answer is said no patients were referred to any facilities. This is signed by the MEC here. That is the response that you give in terms of the numbers of patients. Let's leave that side alone. I want to find out what is the role of the health ombudsman with regard to the KwaZulu-Natal incident of cancer. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Minister. You are reading an information that is not in the report, which is your preview. Now, can you allow me to finish, Honourable Kopane? Which I don't think it's fair to everybody, because in the report, it is not there. I'm not talking about the non-availability of the MEC. I'm talking about the numbers that you quote. And I don't think it's really fair. I will comment on that in terms of what then the minister said in terms of how we handle information. Honourable Mahlalela, Minister, I don't know, why don't you allow...
No, Chair. I wanted just to deal with...
Sorry. Honourable Kopane, that's not how we do things here. If there is something that you want, I hope even the MEC didn't... No, that's wrong. That's not correct. Because it means everybody can just... I think MEC, that is a bit... a little bit out of order. If there is something that you wanted from here at another time, and she should not have responded either, as the member of Parliament, she knows that is not supposed to be done.
My apologies, Chair, but you know, Chair, the problem that I'm having is the member of the legislature that is busy giving honourable members of the DA information. I think that member is out of order because he has an opportunity at a KZN legislature to raise all the things that he's giving the members here. And Chair, as members, we do have the right to do oversight, but not to interfere with the services in the hospitals. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mahlale.
No, thanks, Chair. Well, I wanted to clarify one matter and the other one. Well, the first one I wanted to clarify to MEC was that the information on the refusal for access, it's a matter that was raised by the Commission 2 weeks ago when they were appearing before the committee. There is a provincial commissioner, a lady, who is the one that is said to have been refused access when they wanted to verify certain things after the 10 days and 30 days report that they required you to do. So when they wanted to go back and do verification, then they said they were barred from entering the hospitals. So it's not from, I just wanted to clarify that point, that's one. And then secondly, Chair, we are dealing with the Human Rights Commission's report. And we can't be bringing things that are outside the report because we'll be conflicting issues. My plea is that let's focus on the report. The report doesn't say how many patients have died as a result of cancer. There's no way where the report mentions that. That's the report that we're dealing with. But if you are going to bring media reports, we are going to bring issues that were raised by the MPLS somewhere, we're going to be deviating from the task that the Speaker has given us. This report was referred to us by the Speaker to then deal with the report. So any matter that is not arisen in the report or in the Human Rights Commission itself, if you want to deal with it, let's create another space to deal with separately. But for now, let's focus on the report so that we're able to then dispose of the report back to the House on the factual information that we've collected from the Human Rights Commission itself, from the department and from the province, then be able to come. But if we're going to bring all the political issues and start politicking, we'll be creating a problem for ourselves, which is unnecessary to do so. That's my pleasure.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlale. Minister, then...
Yeah, Chairperson, I want to emphasize, because this is an official gathering. It's not just Mlevo session. It's official. Anything that is said here will be recorded, it will be official. And I want to repeat again, the issues of number of people who die from particular disease needs a specialized service with very clear skills, and that service is usually provided by State South Africa or the Medical Research Council, the Rapid Mortality Survey or UNAIDS and all that. It's not any structure. So I want to emphasize, even if the MEC might have answered this question and put a figure there, it remains wrong. It's not allowed. So because it's not an authority on these issues, unless he quotes one of these agencies. If it doesn't quote it from him, then it can't be accepted by this House or by all South Africans or by the media or any other. Because I also am going to ask, where does that figure come from? How did he obtain it? That means if it's true that he did answer a question in this manner. Because I would like to know, at the national level, we don't know. You know, when I saw, I in preparation for this meeting, for that matter, Chairperson, I phoned Professor Shabir Madi, because at the moment the cancer registry is based at the NICD before NAPISA gets finalized. It's based at the National Institute of Communicable Disease at Saidinam. I asked him, can you give me any figure about this thing? He clearly said, no, we are not able to. We are still as far back as 2013. In terms of, because there are even two diagnoses here, Sanja, it's called the laboratory. Can you explain that before I continue? Yes.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. At the moment, the predominant registry in South Africa is called a national pathology-based registry, and this is based on diagnosis of new cases. But we
it means a specimen was taken from the body of that person, from the tumor, sent to the laboratory, a pathologist examined it, it's histology, doc. That's what, yes, it means histology was done, and they say this is a cancer, because I can just look at that person, regardless of the signs and symptoms, and have cancer. So that's what is called laboratory diagnosis. Go on, I'm sorry, I just wanted to explain that.
Problem. The second registry, which is required for international reporting, and we, South Africa, has made a lot of strides towards achieving, is now the population-based registries. This is a registry which exists within a defined population and which allows for tracking from registration to mortality. And until this happens, there is no way any agency can make a linear decision around what was the cause of death. And the population-based registries are now what are emerging in South Africa at the moment.
So I just want the committee to get very clear, because otherwise they will start, you know, misleading people. And when I was fighting the issue of PMBs, where doctors were just writing wrong diagnoses in order to get more money, I warned them, because the moment these things come out, people, you know, university students are doing PhDs. They will quote all these things and say it was raised in parliament, you know. University students are doing that. It will be picked up internationally. It will go on what is this?
Social media.
No, not only social media. When you...
Twitter.
No. Facebook. No, that's
WhatsApp.
What... Yes, no. I didn't want to say that. When you... Google. Yes, it will go on Google, and students who are still coming to be born will go and Google and find this number. And they start believing. That's why it's so dangerous to play around with this type of numbers. I'm appealing, honorable members. Yes. Now, Chairperson, the honorable Kopani is also asking who gets punished. I'm sure you are aware that I'm not such an agency. If you look at the UMPA's person's report, it specifically mentioned who did what and what must happen to them. And that process is on. If the Human Rights Commission wants particular people to be punished, I think they must mention it. It can't be, yes, they have to say so specifically, because it can't be me, because I'm not that authority. I'm not, in terms of the law, I'm not given that power to do something like that. When I tell you I can't even deal with a nurse or a doctor who has been fired from job, etc. So I want you to get clear, perhaps the committee, if they want that, must go back to the Human Rights Commission and ask them specifically. The role of the UMBAT, what I know is that the Human Rights Commission communicated with the UMBAT, who called the MEC. Isn't it? You appeared before the UMBAT on this report. I know that they are sharing that, and that's the role they are playing. Because this matter was not reported by Honorable Kika to the UMBAT. It was reported to the Human Rights Commission. And so the Human Rights Commission is a Chapter 9 institution, meaning in terms of status higher than the UMBAT, because UMBAT is not a Chapter 9 institution, it's a lower institution. So the moment it goes to a higher one, you then cannot go to a lower one and want it to act. So unfortunately, the UMBAT just saw it, and it ends there. It's the Human Rights Commission which must tell you what must do. Chairperson, I forgot something important. Please forgive me, I need to mention it. When I was answering the question from Honorable Mashale about this issue of concurrence, HR, finance, procurement, etc., I forgot something important. I'm serious that these issues are causing problems. I once mentioned them. I mentioned them on the white paper. In order to get exactly how they trouble us, in 2015, I appointed a team called Ministerial Task Team. That was led by former HO, these of health, people who are very highly experienced. The Green Thompson that was mentioned, I put him in that committee. Professor Greg Housom, who was the HOD for health for 19 years, first in the Free State and here in Western Cape, who retired in 2014. I put him in that committee. Ralph Mgijima, who was the first HOD for Gauteng, who became the public service commissioner of the country. I then went to SARS because there are procurement issues there. I got one of their procurement chiefs, and I went to Treasury to get a technical advisor. These five, I gave them a list of five hospitals to go and check all these problems. And they gave me a report whose summary again says the problems in those hospitals is not the hospital themselves. It's what is happening in the provincial government. And it's HR, it's finance, it's procurement, and it's maintenance. I did not talk about it because it's very long. I'm asking for myself if the rules allow. That give me permission to come and present the findings of that committee to you, so that when you do your oversight, you know what is poking us. Because they found all these things of HR, finance, procurement, maintenance. So I've got that report. We've even called HODs to tell them to implement it. Others are implementing, some are not. But I'm just saying, I did not mention it because it's very long. But I'm asking for myself if the rules allow. Can you recall me here? Put me here and say, put that report. I even invited those four gentlemen. Oh, one of them is a lady, sorry, the fifth one. Yes. I invited them to MINMEC so that all the MECs and HODs can hear from the horse's mouth what actually the findings are and what need to be done, because there are recommendations there. And I just realized in your oversight it will also help you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know, the MEC seems that you wanted to respond on something, what I was going to say.
The question about number of people who died.
Now, I don't know whether you want to respond on that, but I think the minister has addressed that. Can I check, is it the issue of numbers? If it's not the issue of numbers, okay.
Very much, Chair. It's not an issue of numbers. That means it's addressed, but we'll check on that one. I have a letter here, Honourable Chair, that was addressed to me on the 31st of August this year, which was written by my office, by myself, in regards to, I wrote this letter to Advocate Majola, following this matter that I stopped, and I'll leave this copy for you, Chairperson. I'll just read two paragraphs. Where he says that the main purpose of this letter is to seek clarity from the Human Rights Commission on the statement allegedly made before the National Portfolio Committee on Health on Wednesday, the 23rd of August, to the effect that it was the Department of Health and especially you as an MEC had refused entry to members of a commission probing or doing oversight work at some KwaZulu-Natal hospitals. Paragraph 3. Upon receipt of the above-mentioned letter, my office has looked at all available records of our commission's appearance before the Portfolio Committee on the 23rd of August. We are unable to find anywhere in the records where the commission stated that Dr. Dlomo has refused entry to members of the commission at some of the hospitals. Having been present at the meeting, I cannot recall any such statement being made, save for confirming that the commission's access to the hospitals was constrained by some security personnel. The Commission denies the contents of the correspondence referred to in paragraph 5 of the letter that we sent. I will leave this Honourable Chair to you to complete and look at.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Member and Minister and the MC and Honourable Members and our guests. I think I will sound like a broken record. Health is a very emotive subject. And then it requests that and requests us as leaders in this institution to try and be more, lower our tempers. I have been watching this, but because roles, I'm not quite sure, I need to consult. What then becomes a role of a member of another sphere of government when coming to a committee? I think I will follow that up with the powers to be, so that we are not then being seen as people who are trying to manage other things. I think what has been raised by Comrade, by Honourable Ndaba, I've been observing it, but I said no, I'm not going to enter into that, because I don't know what happens when people are in the gallery with the members on inside the house. two, I think it's important what the minister has raised, how we handle information as public representatives. Because what we say is something that must be substantiated, because it's something that you are to answer. Maybe the unfortunate part is that I'm the one who's going to be phoned by media as the chair of the committee. And I'm not going to refer a person to another member. I will have to respond on an information that has not been substantiated. I think what Honorable Mahlalela said is very profound, it's very important. We have raised issues that are very important. In Xhosa, they said, we were here on the issues of the challenges of oncology in KZN, but it's a matter that it has raised a number of issues, which some of them are national, but in the center is corruption, which then, as the committee, will then have, assisted by KZN and the National Department through the DG, will then have to follow that up. Because the minister said, we have got the powers either to call the Hawks or the NPA on matters that have said they have not been done. We must not speak on the challenges that engulfing health sector as if there is no history. I'm raising this because I grew up in that center, in that sector. We know for a fact that after 1994, skills migrated in this country. I'm not trying to be defensive, honorable members. I'm raising this around the issue of specialists. We know for a fact the number of specialist ministers migrated in this, not only oncology, a number of them. Maybe as we are then trying to redress, address all those challenges, maybe the department must then begin to come up with a program. Where is the focus going to be? And how best do we encourage? I don't want to elaborate more on what Honorable Maisel empowered us in the last sitting about specialists, about oncology, about who does what. Because we speak as if a doctor that passes today can then be an oncology tomorrow, can be able to administer whatever. No. Everybody is then being trained, and I think that's why my starting point is that we must not speak as if there was never history, but what is it that we must... The last one is concurrence. It was in this committee when one of the MECs, Western Cape, told us in no uncertain terms, when we were asking that, why are you behind when all other provinces are doing AP? I think it was on Ideal Clinic. Said, no, there's concurrence, reminding us that in fact we are the people that are to do ABCD outside you. But I did, minister said, to us concurrence or no concurrence will be told. To us it's about services that are to be delivered to our people. To us is about how then a Department of Health is conducted. So I'm saying, I hear you, this issue of concurrence really is quite a challenge. Maybe it needs to, because I once consulted with Honorable Mahlalela, because he's the most experienced member of parliament here, because he's coming from, I said, but can't we call premiers? He said, no, don't have the right as this house to call premiers. They are accountable to the NCOP, which then brings in a point which is very important, that we are to sit with the select committee as a matter of urgency, because really, truly, and honestly speaking, what the minister is saying is what is being said, right? What the shots are being called by the premier in each and every province in terms of what is to be done. It's not about, if we can't say it, it's not then going to be, and tomorrow it is us, it is the executive, that is then going to be seen as not being so. I've learned quite a lot on this issue of the challenges in KZN and how then you have responded. We are left with a responsibility as this committee, as the minister has said. Yes, minister, I think without looking into the rules, we have got that responsibility of calling you, as we have called you, to say, come in front of us, we need this information. And I think as from now, we will then have to do that as the committee, see how best are we to ensure that we conduct our oversight in this sector, not for the benefit. I once said here, we're coming from difficult political parties, but in the center is the ordinary person who's walking down the street, who goes to a health institution without any flag that I'm a DA member, I'm a PAC member, I'm an ANC member, but a person who needs to be assisted. And it is my belief that we are to provide those services irrespective, and we've got that responsibility. I think we've come to the end of quite a very important and powerful case. Then must go back, correct, put his house on in order with all the challenges that are there. How best do you do the best with the little you have? I believe in that. But I think as we move forward in terms of the issues of HR and finances, we'll then have to do we must have another day into really looking not only in KZN, but I think in all other provinces. Honourable members, I think Honourable Mahlalel, I thought I was
no Chair, I request that the MEC formally table that letter from the Human Rights Commission, and then we ask the Secretary to print the Hansard, because it's now creating a problem as if we said it, we didn't say it, they said it. We must get that print from Hansard so that it's made available, and then we're then able to communicate with them based on the response I gave to you and correspond to them. Because it's not our own creation, it's them who told us. We've needed to ask them. They told us.
Guests don't participate in a discussion. Guests don't participate. It's only members that participate. I'm saying for the third time, guests don't participate in any deliberation in the committee meeting. You'll only participate whether through your body language in NCOP. We've come to the end of such a very... Can members of the committee remain when guests are leaving?